Disturbing the courts, the sheriff had said. But his words reached only a few of a large and constantly changing crowd. Some of those who did hear him felt that still there were two issues involved. One, the disturbance of the municipal courts. The other, the usurpation of the constitutional rights of citizens of the United States. It was at best a difficult position to be in. Why indeed, if Thursday's demonstration had been tolerated, was this identical demonstration of Friday not permitted? But the stage had been set. The exchange you have just heard was the last communication to the demonstrators by the law enforcement agencies. Despite testimony to the contrary, the fire hosing of the afternoon of Friday the 13th and the subsequent action by the police came without warning or order to disperse. The last word to them from law enforcement had been,
"Let me finish. Those who choose to stay here and wait for a place have that as a privilege."
The sheriff had promised a redress of their grievance, a promise that he was perhaps powerless to fulfill. The students took the promise in good faith and upheld their end of the bargain. They were silent when the committee recessed for lunch.
After the noon recess of the committee, the students once again lined up before the hearing room doors. One of them, an English student observing the processes of American government, describes the scene.
The time for the door to open approached. The students waited in an orderly line which they themselves had formed, while the white card holders gathered on one side. Tension mounted. Nobody knew who would get in first. At 1:15, the police opened the door and began to lead in the white card holders. At last, the procession ended, and a policeman counted the seats left for those who had been waiting for over 5 hours. "Room for 15 more," he announced. Then the door shut for the last time. "That's all," shouted a policeman, and the barrier was put back in position. Once again, I failed to get in. Our bargain with the sheriff had been broken. The hearing room was full. The sheriff was still at lunch. So we stood behind the barrier and began chanting once more. After a while, the police inspector in charge called for reinforcements. They took up their position between the barrier and the door and glared at us as we chanted louder. After a few minutes, they rolled out a hose. We sat down to show we were not violent and had no intention of moving. "You want some of this?" yelled a policeman, waving the nozzle about 6 feet away from me. "Well, you're going to get it." And we did. I remained sitting, but turned round and covered the back of my head with my hands. The hose was not overwhelming in power, though it hurt if it hit you in the back of the neck or the kidneys, and it burst one man's eardrum. After about 5 minutes, the police turned off the water and charged.
Student thrown rather brutally across the floor and were unable to keep their balance in the flood of water on the marble flooring here, and seemed to be very hurt, but I see none of them now. Perhaps they're all better. They've all recuperated. Police now are clearing away through the center of the students. Police are hauling out a bearded student, a woman is protesting, and they are dragging her out too. The police who left the upper floor here have suddenly reappeared on the lower floor, and they seem prepared to start hauling the students down the stairs from behind, either one by one or in pairs. The major core of the students are now kneeling, sitting on the upper stairwell. The police are on both sides of them. The kids are sitting down again with their hands in their pockets or their arms crossed. The police are taking them by the arms and hauling them bodily down the long stairway to the main floor. A girl is screaming, refusing to be taken. The principal here is apparently passive resistance. None of the students seem to be striking back. The students are now being taken out one by one, and the students have started again, somewhat weakly, their chant of "We shall not be moved."
We shall not be moved.
The,
police have grabbed a Negro by the ankle and are dragging him down the stairs on his back by the ankles. People around the rotunda in the audience are now seem to be clapping. Apparently they are on the side of the police. Girls are being thrown down. The students are giving each other advice. Let them drag you down. Let them drag you down. They have their arms linked together, so they can't be moved separately. They must be taken down in pairs. Again, the technique of the police seems to be to grab them by the ankles and to hold them down on their backs, down this stairway of some 50 or 60 stairs. One policeman is presently dragging three girls with their arms linked together.
Go ahead and go when I tell you. Go ahead, go ahead. Get out. We linked arms, but they broke us apart, often using fists and billy clubs. I saw no student fighting back, and many used non-violent resistance techniques, letting themselves be dragged with their hands in their pockets. The white-helmeted police hauled them downstairs, one by one. The foot police stood above them and to either side of them. Girls screamed as they were dragged, and the clerks overhead clapped and cheered.
A girl student has advocated that they all get up and leave, and most of them have. There were about 14 or 15 left, and they have gotten up and moved now for the most part. Are helping one girl down who looks somewhat dazed. They let her walk down. At the present moment, all students have been removed, from the upper landing. A few of the boys and girls are going down the stairs. One or two are still being drugged. The police are advising those who wish to walk down to hold on to the handrail because the steps are running with water and very slippery. The crowd on the main floor seems to have grown some. They're not only removing the students from the stairway, from the upper landing, from the stairway, they're hauling them all the way out of the building. I see a policeman wrestling with a girl right now. Another girl is fighting back. The first girl seems to have been kicked. Other people coming to their defense are also being drawn out. There's still about half a dozen students sitting on the main floor. There are present 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 policemen surrounding them. They're trying to break them apart. They link their arms together so they cannot be moved separately, but must be moved in as a group or else broken apart to move.
People in Tibet. No. We've got to fight for the communists.
Learn about democracy!
Right in the way.
Let's trouble.
Oh, no.
They shouldn't do that.
And so the incident of Friday, May 13th, 1960, ended. 64 were arrested on charges of inciting to riot, disturbing the peace, and resisting arrest. Chief of Police Cahill gave the police version of the incident.
The whole incident which resulted in violence yesterday was triggered when, according to my officers who were on the scene, they say that a member of the group charged one of my officers assigned to the Northern District Station, a police officer in uniform. They took his nightclub away from him, struck him over the head, and the incident was triggered, which resulted in the police being forced to take the necessary action to control the group, to bring the whole situation under control and to restore order.
Not one of the more than 200 witnesses can place the incident of which the chief speaks. One of the arrested demonstrators, a high school student, in an interview with Ernest Lowe, gave a version of the incident with which virtually all of the demonstrators and eyewitnesses agreed.
Immediately prior to the hosing, were the students seated or standing?
The great majority of the students were sitting. All those students in front of the barricade, that is, closest to the barricade, were sitting.
Later in the same interview, Lowe put the important question.
Now, did you have any warning from the police?
But we had no... I had no warning, and the warning was certainly not loud enough, if there was one, for me to hear it. I was close enough so that I should have heard it if it was spoken.
Another eyewitness whose sincerity cannot be questioned was interviewed on the scene by Fred Haynes, a local radio reporter.
And how did you get all wet, son?
Well, I was just over there singing and saying, "We shall not be moved." They came along and they turned the hose on us.
And, how old are you?
10.
You're 10. Were you in the rotunda when this happened?
I was in here. Not right here. I was over there by the steps.
And you were with your brother?
Most of the time.
And how old is he?
16.
And where is he now, do you know?
In petty wagons.
All the other student demonstrators and witnesses, with the exception of the police department, could recall no warning to the students, no order to disperse immediately prior to the use of the fire hoses.
Who gave the order for the use of the hoses? Students ask the mayor and the chief of police.
Who gave the order to not open the police without warning asking to turn the hoses on our
face? Well,
I imagine you or someone in this room doesn't know.
Well, I don't know because I was not even here.
Did you find out?
The chief is here. Chief of Police Cato.
I don't know. I wasn't here.
Mr. Willis, too, was not present.
I wasn't even around. Didn't know anything about it until after the event. I was eating lunch.
Just after lunch and just prior to the hosing incident, two members of the Students for Civil Liberties tried to make contact with law enforcement officials. For the first time in the day and a half which the demonstrations had run, they were unable to make such contact. This despite the fact that those students knew, and the police surely must have known, that the moment of maximum tension would occur when the doors were opened for the afternoon session and the bargain with the sheriff would be put to the test. The mayor was out of town. The chief of police was not in. And the sheriff, who had said,
"I will be here all day."
Here.
I'm here all day.
The sheriff was not available. For a while, it looked as though no one knew who gave the order to turn on the hoses. The officer in charge, it was later determined, was Inspector McGuire of the San Francisco Police Force. Mr. McGuire was later asked to testify before the House subcommittee, but in that testimony, he, the one official witness present at the beginning of the incident, was not asked how that incident started.
The next day, Saturday, May 14th, 5,000 people gathered at San Francisco City Hall. The block on which it was situated was completely ringed by a double line of pickets. Their signs called for the abolition of the committee and indicated shock and indignation at the police action of the previous day. One picketer wore a raincoat and carried, instead of a sign, a large umbrella.
Mr. Willis congratulated the police department on a job well done, in spite of the difference of opinion offered by certain of the witnesses.
Honorable beaters of children and sadists, uniformed and in plain clothes, distinguished Dixiecrat wearing the clothing of a gentleman, eminent Republican who opposes an accommodation with the one country with which we must live at peace in order for us all and our children to survive. My boy of 15 left this room a few minutes ago in sound health and not jailed solely because I asked him to be in here to learn something about the procedures of the United States government and one of its committees. Had he been outside where the son of a friend of mine had his head split by these goons operating under your orders, my boy today might have paid the penalty of permanent injury or a police record for desiring to come here and hear how this committee operates. If you think that I am going to cooperate with this collection of Judases, of men who sit there in violation of the United States Constitution, if you think I will cooperate with you in any way, you are insane.
Proceed, I formally protest this committee's brutal and public attempt to hold my son up for public scorn. An 18-year-old boy, loved and respected by his family, his friends, and his community, and I might add that this continues to grow, especially after his appearance before you. You should be ashamed of yourselves to stoop to such vicious and low tactics.
Now, sir, since you, on your
own... I have not finished answering your question. I am answering your question, sir. Yesterday at 1:15, my boy was standing outside talking to a KPFA reporter, and suddenly he was hit by the full force of a fire hose. He acted as any red-blooded American would. He attempted to stand his ground. He offered nonviolent resistance. He was choked, his arm was twisted, and he was flung into jail where he was booked, photographed, and it took me 4 hours to find him, gentlemen. I am very disturbed about this. I am his father. You are trying to pillory my son, and I stand here, and I object to it. And I want everybody in the country to know it, and let it be placed in the record. Let the record show that this disgraceful incident in the last 24 hours are the responsibility of Mr. Wheeler and this committee trying to stack this committee with his card-carrying conspiracy. That's what they are, to fill this hearing so that American people cannot hear and see what is going on for themselves. I am very, very much shaken up about this. These children are trying to learn about American democracy.
You're reading.
Mr. Aaron says, I am reading from the notes which I constructed while listening to you. These are just notes. One Saturday allowed the police to tell their story. Why not allow the students to come in and tell their story? Why not allow the tape that KPFA made of that incident outside yesterday about the hose? Put that in the record, and that will show the story.
Conflicting reports of the incidents of the previous day filled the press and the air like shrapnel. The committee charged that the demonstrations were communist-inspired and directed, and moved swiftly to cover its own tracks and those of the police department. Mr. Ahrens questioned the star witness, Mr. Prussian.
Well, now, based upon your background and experience in the communist operation, what can be expected in the communist press and through the communist channels and in the form of communist expressions with respect to the violence which took place here yesterday?
The communist press will carry out a campaign of vilification of the committee and un-American activities. They will hurl invectives. They will accuse the city of San Francisco of police brutality, sadism, denial of democratic rights.
The communist press, said Mr. Prussian. Here is a quotation from the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle, hardly a communist organ, of May 14th, 1960, on the newsstands at the very time Mr. Prussian was speaking.
Then from nowhere appeared a third officer. He ran up to the slender boy firmly held by the other two officers and clubbed him 3 times on the head. You could hear the hollow smack of the club striking. The boy went limp and was carried out.
And reporter Mel Wax in the New York Post of May 15th, 1960.
I saw it happen. Never in 20 years as a reporter have I seen such brutality. San Francisco police hurled women down the staircase, spines bumping on each marble stair. I saw one woman dragged through glass from a broken front door pane. 2 big cops seized a thin, gray-suited student from the University of California. One held him while the other hit him, again and again, in the stomach.
Charges against the students, all save one, whose case is still before the courts, were dropped. That student is charged with the alleged action which precipitated the hosing. The action which no one can recall. The action about which the committee failed to question Police Inspector McGuire. Petitions to the Attorney General asking a grand jury investigation of the incident and supporting the student position were signed by professors from the University of California, Stanford University, San Francisco State College, and other Bay Area colleges. Many organizations came to the support of the students. Here is the resolution of the California Federation of Teachers.
Whereas traditionally students have been in the forefront of the defense of civil liberty, even at great personal risk, as recent events in Hungary, Turkey, and Korea have clearly shown, and whereas the nonviolent protest of students of the Bay Area colleges against the existence and conduct of the House Un-American Activities Committee are an assertion of this traditional role. Therefore, the California State Federation of Teachers, AFL-CIO, welcomes and heartily endorses these protests against the committee and publicly thanks the college students of the Bay Area for their dedication and for the courage to protest even in the face of brutal and unjustifiable coercion and arrest. And it hereby constitutes itself a fundraising body to aid students arrested while engaged in nonviolent defense of our civil liberty.
Through all the conflicting reports and testimonies, the students steadfastly maintained that they had been misled by no one, that the charge of communist manipulation was completely untrue. They maintained that they had done nothing to provoke the excessive police action, and that their subsequent resistance had been passive. After the incident started, there were isolated instances of other than passive resistance, but by that time, these instances could hardly be said to have provoked the police action.
Upon their dismissal, the students issued the following statement, here read by a local broadcaster.
We appreciate Judge Axelrod's courage, which has ensured the triumph of justice and good sense. The defendants have been vindicated. Encouraged by the court's action, we shall continue our opposition to the House Committee on Un-American Activities. It is now doubly clear that public protests against it are in accord with American justice. Nobody incited us. Nobody misguided us. We were led only by our own convictions, and we will stand firmly by them.
The controversy over the demonstrations of May 12th, 13th, and 14th continues. The mayor of San Francisco indicated to the press that he would prefer that the committee, should it schedule any future trips to San Francisco, would use the federal building for its hearings, where the army could protect it. The committee was quick to respond. They said that they were surprised at the words of Mayor Christopher, but not too surprised. And so, the familiar pattern of innuendo continues. Why did the students oppose the committee? Perhaps the words of Justice Black best express their feelings.
The court today fails to see what is here for all to see, that exposure and punishment is the aim of this committee and the reason for its existence. To deny this aim is to ignore the committee's own claims and the reports it has issued ever since it was established. I cannot believe that the nature of our judicial office requires us to be so blind, and must conclude that the Un-American Activities Committee's identification and exposure of communists and suspected communists, like the activities of the committee in Kilburn versus Thompson, amount to an encroachment on the judiciary which bodes ill for the liberties of the people of this land. Ultimately, all the questions in this case really boil down to one: whether we as a people will try fearfully and futilely to preserve democracy by adopting totalitarian methods, or whether in accordance with our traditions and our constitution, we will have the confidence and the courage to be free.